Hi, my name is Tracy and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Tracy.
And thank you, Karen, for asking me to do this, and I really do mean that. I have had way too much time to think about this. I think if I ever have to do this again, I hope they ask me like 5 minutes before I have to do it. I've had to spend this whole past week unthinking it, really, trying to get my ego out and let God in. And if I mention God in this story, then I would like you to just insert your idea of what your God is. For me, as far as I can get with that understanding of a God, is I know that I have a higher power that has helped me and is willing to help me as long as I'm willing to work with that power. And that's about the extent of my explanation for or understanding of a God that has been crucial to my recovery. I guess I really need to start the story in the very beginning, because I really think I've had this thing for alcohol for a long time. I was born in Germany. My dad was in the service, and he drank beer, and I have pictures of me in a diaper laying on the floor, like guzzling this bottle of Black Label beer. And he told me that I used to, if he set down his beer, I would be crawling as fast as I could to get to that beer to finish the last few sips that were in the bottom of the bottle. And now I could think that maybe I liked the taste of the beer and that's why I did that, or I could think that alcohol really, even at that age, might have been doing something for me to keep wanting to go back to it and have that connection for it. So we moved to, from Germany, we moved to Colorado, and then we moved to Ohio. And by the time we were in Ohio, my dad was out of the service. And my dad is an alcoholic, and his drinking accelerated at that time. And I remember in childhood, I'm not really telling my dad's story, but this is what I knew about alcoholics and alcoholism at that time. And I was probably, this is between the ages of about 4 and 9, I'd say. He had to go to the mental hospital, and where he got electric shock treatments. They were doing that then. And we would have to drive a really long way to go visit him. And we got to be introduced to all his new friends, which was kind of scary when you were a little kid, his new friends. And I remember people coming to the house at night after we were in bed and talking to my mom in whispers, and my dad would disappear for days, and my mom was always crying and upset about something. And so it was really accelerating. And I knew, my mom told me that my dad was sick, and that's what I knew, and that I knew the word alcoholism and alcoholic, and that's all I really knew about that. During this period of time also, I never, and I hear this repeated over and over in the meetings too, that this must be a common bond that we have, is that feeling that I didn't fit in, I didn't belong anywhere. I could fit in a lot of places, but I never felt that I belonged anywhere. And I can remember clearly walking down the street in front of my house one day and just thinking, it's me against the world. I have got nobody on my side. Nobody gets me. You know, I'm different from everybody, and just having that totally isolated feeling. I also was never happy, never comfortable where, you know, not comfortable in my own skin, but comfortable anywhere I was at either. At age 7, I was running away from home. I have no idea really why. I'd get mad about something and I'd take off. And I remember passing my dad on the road. He was coming back from somewhere. I'm like, oh, great. He's going to ruin this running away thing for me. And he started walking with me. And he's like, well, how are you going to eat, you know? And what are you going to do? This is Ohio, you know? It's winter time, you know? And I'm like, well, I really didn't think all that stuff out, darn it. But I just knew I needed to go. And that's the way that I react to a lot of things in my life, like, I just got to go. I got to flee and run and just can't sit still for it and deal with it. So anyway, our family decided that we were going to have that geographic cure for alcoholism, and that's why we ended up here in Georgia. And my dad, and actually we moved just right across the street from the Howell place, but the Howell place wasn't there then. We had the geographic cure, and he did go. That was probably his longest stint that he went without drinking, and we thought, oh, he was cured and everything's better, but that obviously was not the case. I do know that he did go to at least one AA meeting, because I found the Serenity Prayer on a little card at home, and I remember that I loved that prayer, and I memorized it, so that was like nothing new when I got here. It was like I have used that in the past. So anyway, during this time, too, so I'm in elementary school, and I... And I made friends with this girl who's also named Tracy, and her older brother and sister were they partied, and so I sort of got into that. I don't remember doing a whole lot of drinking in elementary school, but I do remember like smoking pot and not really thinking too much about that. And it really, I know that my mom had let us have champagne one New Year's Eve, and there was like three of us or four of us drinking it, and nobody liked it but me. And I remember I had my own little party in front of the TV with the New Year's Eve stuff going on, and my mom's like, "You're going to feel so bad when you get up in the morning." And I was like, "What?" And I got up, and I didn't feel bad at all. I knew I wanted more. That was pretty cool. I love that stuff. And then moving into high school, I partied. I partied, and that's where, drugs were easier to get. And to tell you the truth, I was motivated by fear through my whole entire life, but I was never fearful of drugs and alcohol. You could hand me anything, and I wouldn't even question it. I would just do it. And it didn't matter if I was going up or down, just as long as I wasn't in the present moment feeling what I was feeling. It just didn't matter. So I managed to, stay out of trouble. And that was the other thing, too. Going into high school, I didn't have any older brothers and sisters. I was the oldest in my family. And so I didn't know what to expect. And I was just fearful of everything. So I was a great student. I was in the honor roll. And I graduated early from high school and actually just went back to graduate with my class because I just wanted to get it done and get out of there. I was just... And I didn't want to fail, I think that was the whole deal for me. But I still managed to, drink. And one of the biggest things I can remember in high school that happened is I went with another friend of mine to babysit for her sister. And she said, "I bought us a bottle of wine." And so I was pretty excited about that. And I remember, I think she probably had a glass of wine because actually she was babysitting. And I drank the rest of that wine, and I drank a whole entire bottle of Seagram 7. And I got so deathly sick for like 2 days. I had to keep calling my mom and making excuses why I couldn't. The babysitting job has been extended because I couldn't go home. horrifically sick. And then after that, I thought, I can't wait to do that again. Who thinks like that other than an alcoholic? Who thinks like that? I just cannot wait to go through that all over again. So I managed to pretty much stay out of trouble, though, all through high school, and I continued, the drinking and drugging. And out of high school, I got in the fast food restaurant business, and, fear motivated, I ended up being like the shift manager and stuff like that. And then I ended up working I don't even remember going for this job interview, not because I was under the influence, but I just can't remember for some reason, but I kind of think I know why I wanted the job. It was at this gigantic toy store, and I didn't have to sit still, and there was plenty of things to occupy myself with. If I got bored, there was toys, and I met a really good friend of mine. His name's Paul, and he became my best party buddy ever, and we had good work ethics, but in that parking lot, this is at Windy Hill Road in Smyrna, there were three bars. Basically, we could get, there was a country western place, there was a regular bar, and then there was a sandwich shop that had beer and wine there. So we took turns going from one place to the other for lunch. And that was back in the days of 2-for-1 and 3-for-1s. And we'd get literally for a few dollars a whole table full of beer on our lunch break. And we drank that, and some of the managers would come in and sort of like just look at us and shake our heads, but they never said anything because we were still the best employees that they had. We still worked hard, and worked better, under the influence. So nobody ever said, "Don't do it," And so from there, but what I did when we would sit and drink that beer is I was watching these girls, because money was a huge issue, especially if I wanted to drink. And I had a couple roommates, and none of them were working. And I was sort of trying to support us all on this little minimum wage job I had at the toy store. And so I kept watching the money that these girls were getting that waiting tables, and I thought, you know what, I can do this, and I can do this better than they can do it. I know I can. So I kept watching what they were doing. So that's what I did. I ended up going to a place called Earthquake Magoons, and waited tables there, and I did a really good job. And the really cool thing was at the end of the shift, you got a free shift drink. And that, I don't know if you can see that red cup I got over there, that was the size of my shift drink that I got every night. And it was free. And I didn't drink while I was working, but I definitely drank after I was working. And I went from there to, there were some shady dealings going on at that place, and I was sort of given a heads up about that, so I sort of like got out of there in a hurry. And I went to the busiest bar in Smyrna for many, many years, Doc's. And I came into the bar, walked up to the bar and asked for an application, and the bartender, she says, "Well, how much experience do you have?" And I said, "Well, you know, a couple months." And she says, "Well, no, you have over a year." I'm like, "Okay." And she goes, "And I don't care if you like it or not, when she comes out to interview you, compliment whatever she has on." And I'm like, "Okay, I can do that." Well, the funny thing about that was, is I had, because I had no money, I had gone to the thrift store and bought the sweater to wear for the interview that cost 75 cents. And she came out and she goes, first of all, I'm like, "I love your dress, that's beautiful." And she's like, "Oh, thank you, thank you." And she goes, "I love that sweater. You know, I had one like it. I just gave it to the thrift store." And I'm like, there is no way that I am wearing her sweater. I was not about to tell her that that was her sweater either. I'm like, "Well, wow, that's, we have the same taste." That was crazy. But anyway, needless to say, I did get that job. And it was a good, you know, it was a good job. It was a fun job. We had a great group of people. I didn't drink while I was working, because we had to, back then you had to carry your money with you, not only my money but the restaurant's money too, and that was a lot of money, and I was really, really afraid of losing that money and not being able to, you know, pay it back. So I didn't drink for the longest time, and I was very efficient. I always had the highest sales there, and but everybody's always like, "Come on, do a shooter with us. And so finally, it was some kind of celebration or something, and they encouraged drinking then because it was money. You know, that's what the owner saw, was dollar signs. Yeah, let the guys buy the girls drinks. So, you know, it's more money for us. So that was definitely encouraged. And so I that day I did a couple shooters, and, you know, everybody's always saying to me too, "I just don't naturally smile for some reason. You just can't walk around for 8 hours with a smile." And everybody's like, "Well, you need to smile more. I was efficient. So if you were an alcoholic, you sat in my station because you'd get a drink, boom, 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 you'd never be out. If you wanted somebody to socialize with, you sat in somebody else's station because I just wasn't the social butterfly. I was efficient. So... anyway, and that's why I had high sales, because I had all the alcoholics, I guess. But I did a shooter that day, and all of a sudden I'm smiling, and I'm talking to people, and I'm still efficient, and my tips are going up. So I'm thinking, okay, I get this. Maybe I'll just start drinking like everybody else is drinking. So I did. And there's lots of drugs in my story, and mostly because everybody else was doing it. It was readily available. It was free. That's one thing about being a bartender and a waitress in a bar, is they want to keep your customers want to keep you happy, so the drinks keep coming. So. But most of the drugs that I did is so that it would enable me to be able to drink more alcohol, you know, stay up longer and drink more, really. And I managed still to kind of stay out of trouble. I put myself in a lot of dangerous positions, I would say, that I could have gotten in trouble or gotten hurt, for sure. But we had a great, I really became like the, you know, alcohol made me feel better. You know, I finally felt like I belonged and fit in, you know, and I was like the social director. We had this great group of people. We'd do everything. We'd go whitewater rafting. We'd go to concerts. We'd go get buses and go to baseball games, and we'd tailgate at football games, and it was just a big, good group of us, and we had fun. We had lots of fun. There wasn't a lot of repercussion, you know. I mean, we all, and never once did it ever occur to me that there was anything abnormal about my drinking, because the people that my roommates drank like I drank, the people I work with drank like I drank, and the people that were, you know, coming to the bar drank like I drank. I fit in. I was exactly like the rest of them. Nothing was abnormal about my drinking whatsoever to me. But I did, I had some kind of physical thing going on, and it took me a long time to figure out what it was, and part of what I had to do and why I become such a health nut, Dennis, is change my diet. But part of that was to eliminate alcohol. So I did. And for 9 months, I didn't drink anything. And I thought I was doing fine. I thought everything was really fine. But we were all at a Scalini's, and everybody was drinking and eating pasta, and I couldn't do that. And I'm sitting there with my salad, and I'm like, you know what? If I can't have pasta, I'm going to have a glass of wine. And I had that glass of wine, and it was just like, I just melted. It was heaven. I mean, it was just like this release, you know, that I didn't even know that I needed until I had it. That had been going on that whole 9 months, just waiting for that. And I'm like, that's it. I've got to have something. I've got to have an escape. You know, this is my escape. So it was on again. You know, it was just on. So anyway, So I don't know. I can see the progression in this disease. It is a progressive disease without a doubt. I ended up. There was a fire at Doxson. I had gone to work for a few years at, I worked there for a total of 10 years, but it was 3 years I worked there, and then I left and went to another place for 3 years. And one of the owners of that place had bought a bar down here on Bells Ferry Road and wanted me to come work for him, and I just was ready for a change. So I moved out here off Kellogg Creek and started working there. And this group of people was, oh my gosh, I couldn't keep up with them, the little social network there. They drank harder and more, and I know you know Byron. And it was incredible. And I got into thoroughbred horse racing and was going to all the tracks and to the casinos, and gambling became a part of it. And I really did my best to keep up with these people, but it accelerated my drinking. And today I'm grateful, because I could still be out there if it didn't accelerate as fast as it did. And I think I got here late as it is. But anyway, so, you know, it accelerated, and I'm keeping up with these people, but we're, you know, it's a good time, you know, and I got lots more responsibility, because, you know, I'm managing this place, I'm doing ordering the liquor, I'm pretty much doing everything. But it got to a point where I think maybe I surpassed these people, and negative things were happening. And, you know, one of those worst things, I still hate hearing this, is, don't you remember? And it's like, oh God, here goes, you know, and just not remembering what I had done before, and having to make amends to people for things that I didn't even remember doing, and it got to where I was not being included as much, and I just got miserable. You know, people, I just, very negative, it just got very negative, you know, as being left out of stuff, left behind to take care of the bar, basically, while everybody else went and played, instead of getting to go and play with them. And so I started isolating a little bit then. I pretty much, you know, I got pulled over, I can't tell you how many times, because I drank and drive, period, you know. And was let go, and I don't have any idea how that happens, you know. I'm like, I wanted to ask the cop if he could please help me get out of the ditch that I'd pulled off into when he pulled me over, because he's letting me go, and I'm like, but I can't make it the rest of the way, you know. It's almost like, please take me to jail, I can't do this, you know. But I did ended up getting a DUI, and that, I think the book talks about standing at the turning point. I think this was one of the huge turning points, and I can't really explain it, but I had a little help in getting this DUI. I actually had somebody call the police and tell them that I was leaving when I left. And I went for the old blood test thing, and I'm spending the whole night running around with these cops. And it took 9 months to get the blood test back, which I knew what they were going to be, and I ended up doing my community service and all that. My license was suspended for a year. I could drive to work only, and that was it. And that was a problem for one reason, because I just started going back to my mom's church with her, thinking that that's what was wrong with me, that I needed to go to church. So I was going to have to tell my mom why I wasn't going to church and see if she'd give me a ride with them. So I'd called her and told her to come over, and she's sort of like, yeah, I kind of knew you had a problem here. And I'm like, no, I don't have a problem. I just had a DUI. So anyway, but there was no problem with the license thing because I worked at a bar. And there was a grocery store in the parking lot, and there was a liquor store across the street. So that didn't curtail me at all. I did not drink and drive for a while, and I had this probation officer that I was supposed to call, and she never would take my calls or call me back. So I figured, well, I guess I'm not really on probation after all. But I did start hiding alcohol in my house just in case there was like a surprise visitor or something, you know. I started hiding alcohol, and I lived by myself. And this just seemed logical at the time. But anyway, so I got bitter, and my drinking accelerated after that DUI. It's just like, you know, I've done it now, you know, and I knew that something had to change, and I knew that I could not drink at this point. And so I just didn't care anymore. As soon as I got to work, I'd start, you know, slamming shooters and stuff, and I just into oblivion. And I got fired from that job, and I didn't know what I was going to do at that point, and I was very, very angry, very, very angry. But so I didn't think about it for a while, and just sort of, you know, I'd go to the liquor stores and stock up and drink into blackouts. And I ended up, I went and sold appliances for a little while, thinking maybe I just needed to get out of the bar business. And I didn't mind the job. Well, no, I hated the job, to tell you the truth. I was okay at it because, once again, fear-driven to be good at it. So I was pretty good at it, but I hated it. And I remember driving home one day thinking, and I hadn't drank in a while. I thought, you know, okay, I'm just going to stop while I'm, you know, doing this job and see if I can stop. And I remember driving home one day thinking, I wonder if I am going to ever drink again. And that was all it took. It was on again. It's like, of course you are, you know. So I ended up, I drank myself into a blackout, and which was, you know, normal. But this one I came out of on the interstate in my sister's car. She had literally kidnapped me. And she lives in Macon, and we were almost to Macon, and I come out, and I'm like, okay, where am I? Because most of the time I came out of blackouts, I came out, I was in my house, which was good. And at this point, you know, I wasn't socially drinking with anybody. It was stock up, stay home, drink into a blackout, and that was my life that I was living. And so down in Macon, she called all these different rehab places trying to get me into rehab, and I it's like, I can't afford this. I really just can't afford this, you know. So I thought, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go, take me to a bookstore, and I'm going to get a bunch of books on this, and I'm going to figure this out, that self-knowledge thing, you know. So she did, and my mom had taken me to a meeting, and I had gotten a big book, and I read every single book except for that big book, because every time I opened that big book, it seemed like it was in a foreign language to me, you know. Everything else was making sense, but not this big book. So I went to this outpatient thing there, and this is to the point that my body had gotten physically. You had to have a breathalyzer test every time you went there. And I was there for like 3 weeks, and I never had a drink of alcohol once I got to once my sister had taken me out. I never could pass that breathalyzer. I was not metabolizing alcohol at all. It was in my system. And if it was, and they wouldn't have believed me if it wasn't for my sister so adamantly there with me saying, I know she hasn't had anything to drink. It's good. You know, they tried different breathalyzers. They recalibrated. I could not. I was not metabolizing the alcohol at all. So eventually I ended up escaping because my sister's house, because she did at least let me come back to get... And this kind of makes me sad. She brought me back to my house, and the whole time I knew that when I was at her house that I had a bottle of liquor stashed, and I could not get that out of my mind. And she came back with me and our kids to get me some clothes and get my car, because the idea was I was gonna. I actually signed this contract with her. It breaks my heart to this day. That I would allow her be in her care until she decided I was okay to be on my own again. That's how much my sister loved me. And so she brought me back to my house to get my clothes and my car and stuff, because I was going to go out there and find a job and get fixed. And I drank that alcohol. I'd go back, they kept sneaking back to the back, and I thought she didn't know, but she didn't know. And the next day I was like, you know what? I don't think so. I think I'm staying here and just it hurt her so bad that even in my haze, I was like, okay, forget it, I'm going. So I went back with her. But the first opportunity, she had a church thing going on. The first opportunity, she was taking the kids, and I was supposed to take care of the animals. And I, like, wrote her husband a note and said, you better remember to feed the animals or she's going to kill us both, but I'm out of here. And I went back home, and I did get back in the restaurant. And for the next 2 years, both my mom and my sister said, you know, don't call us. You know, if you want help, call us, but we can't watch you kill yourself anymore. So they just, and they had to, and I don't blame them one bit. And it's actually probably a good thing, because then I had absolutely nobody. So I went through 6 jobs, I think, in less than 2 years, all in the restaurant business. I would try to pick up as many shifts as I could so I would not have a day off, but when it came to having a day off, I'd go to the liquor store, I'd drink into the blackout. I'd have no idea how long I'd been in the blackout, and just never go back to the job, because I had no idea how many, you know, I did a couple times make some excuses up, some just unbelievable stories that something tragic had happened, and go back, and then, you know, it's like after that, it's like you run out of excuses and stories, and it's just like, just don't go back. So I really can't tell you what was any different about my last blackout, other than I was physically totally, totally wrecked. And I drank myself into a blackout. I had bought a clock that would light up the day of the week. So when I came out of blackout, I'd know at least what day it was. But that stopped working, because then I couldn't figure out what week I was in the month, literally. I mean, literally. And coming out of those blackouts was really, really bad, because I had like this rebound effect, and I wouldn't be able to sleep. I don't know, I went 7 days without sleeping once. And it was so horrific, but I had to come out of it. I had to go through that, and I had hallucinations. So that's all the, you know, the DT stuff, where I'd see things crawling on the wall and people walking through. And I did call my mom once and told her that all my neighbors were in my yard. They were here to kill me and all this stuff, which I thought they were. It was all seemed real, I guess. But, you know, I did that over and over again. But the last blackout I came out of, I came out and I was wrecked, and I didn't really think that I couldn't drink another drink, and I knew that I could not drink another drink. And I just remember screaming at the top of my lungs, how did this ever happen? How did I get here? You know, this is not what I had planned at all. When did this happen? This used to be fun. This was fun. What happened, you know? And I was always chasing that fun, I think, and it was gone. It was gone a long time ago. So I decided that what I needed to do is, I knew about the Howe Place, because some of my customers at the bar down the road used to go have a few shots with me, and then come, we're going down to the Howe Place to an AA meeting, you want to come with us? Like, I really don't think that's how it's supposed to work, but so I knew it was here. And so it took me almost 4 days to get physically able to leave my house to come up here. And I remember pulled up in the parking lot. I'm like, this is kind of like people out there smoking and stuff, and it kind of looked like a bar or something, you know. I'm like, okay, this might not be too bad. But I was petrified to walk through the doors, and this guy was sitting out on the porch. He says, you look scared to death. I said, well, I am. And I just like zoomed past him, and I don't remember anything about that meeting other than afterwards. I don't know if you guys know, Carmen and Joanna came up to me afterwards and were so nice to me. And Carmen says, and I was like ulterior and everything, and she's like, girl, you need to get yourself some chocolate. And I'm like, what does that have to do with anything at all? I get that today. I totally get the chocolate thing today. But then I had no idea what she was talking about. And I remember telling my mom, well, I met these really nice women, and one of them's really, really sweet, and I think the other one's crazy. She told me to eat chocolate. And so so I was so afraid of myself. And I did have a job pending, because I had gotten this job and didn't have to start it for like a little over a week. And that's when I went into that blackout. But I still had come out of the blackout in time. I could have made it to the job. But I knew that I couldn't do that, because I was going to repeat the same thing I had been doing for the last 2 years, going to that job until I had a day off, and the whole thing would start all over again. So I didn't leave here. I left here to go on my third day here, I met a guy and he said, you need to go down to the extension and hear JJ's Power Hour. So I left here to go do that. And I remember him, this guy telling me things like, well, you need to get a sponsor and stuff. But I said, you know, I just want the old me back. And he's like, you're limiting yourself. And none of the stuff that he said then was making sense. It seemed wise what he was saying, but I get it all today, you know. And at the extension, JJ came up to me afterwards and he said, you know what? We can help you. And he was so sincere and so honest. And I remember thinking for the first time in my life, I think I found where I belong. Not that I fit in, but I found where I belong. And that is the first time in my life that I felt that way. And I would go down there for the big book study they had. But otherwise, I did not leave this place. We had little mini meetings. There was a group of us that would sit outside between the meetings and have our own little mini meetings because none of us wanted to leave. We were all afraid of ourselves. So I had met this girl, and I kept sitting with her in here, and I was really afraid to ask anybody to sponsor me, and she kept saying, you got to get a sponsor, you got to get a sponsor, and she kept talking about how good her sponsor was, and finally I was just like, why can't I have your sponsor? You know, she goes, oh, okay, well, she comes to the Tuesday night meeting, I'll introduce you. So that was day 7. That was a week into my sobriety. Tracy was my sponsor, and the first thing that she said to me is, whatever your idea of God is, put it on a shelf. Just put it on a shelf. That's all I'm asking you to do. And that was easy because I really had no concept of God. I played around and messed around with the whole idea of God for a long time, on and off with the whole idea. So that was an easy thing. But today I realized what she asked me for was one, willingness and an open mind. And to me, that's been the key to my program in this. I went to work on the steps immediately. And actually, there's a thing called Novalco, and if you don't know, some of my Novalco people are here, but it's just a way of taking people as a group through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous using the big book and the 12 and 12, and everybody still has a sponsor and everything, but that's how I was taken through the steps, and I needed that structure. I'm, you know, the student-type person. I need the things on paper, and that's how it really worked for me. I remember getting very irritated at her, the things that she would say, like, well, why don't you get a dictionary and look it up, or you're exactly where you're supposed to be, but I don't want to be here, you know, and one of the things that people say that I really held on to was the one that really helped me in the beginning was the one day at a time thing. That helped me because if I had to look beyond that, I was lost. But I started having anxiety attacks sitting in these rooms because I realized that nothing in my life was ever going to be the same again. And that was so fearful. Alcohol, my whole life had been planned around alcohol. You know, anything I was doing, the alcohol plans were planned first and then everything else planned around that basically. And that's what I did my whole life. That's what I did. And I had that brilliant idea that, sure, I can go back and work at the bar. And so I called my sponsor like you're supposed to, and she shot that down in a hurry, and I just couldn't really understand it, you know. And then one day I'm standing out in the parking lot, and somebody that was drunk showed up here, and they ended up having to call the police, and he was in my face, and I'm smelling this alcohol, and he's so obnoxious, and I was like, I can't do this. I can't go back in the bar business, you know. So once again, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. And then I thought, well, I can work at a liquor store, though. Because I know all the ingredients, and I can be a top salesperson there because I can tell them what they need, and I'd be selling them all kinds of bottles of this stuff, you know, and the bottles are sealed, you know. Not that I couldn't get it and take it home with me, but she sort of shot that down too. So then I went to Cracker Barrel and tried to work there, but that was my first, I wasn't working for the first 3 months. I was staying here in this room, and I could do with you guys in life in here, but when I got out there, it was like scary. I was wanting to run back here. You know, I was like, I can do with you guys. I get you guys. You guys get me. But those people out there, they're scaring me, you know. So, I hated that job. So I got to do something else. So I ended up, I clean houses now and pet sit for people, which is very ironic because I have a purse full of keys and people trust me. You know, they trust me with their animals, they trust me with their house. You know, it's phenomenal where I was to where I am now. But anyway, so And here I am. I have facilitated a Navalco, and I hope to do that again here, to help people. I sponsor people. I went to the international convention, and that had to be one of the most incredible things I've ever experienced, to know that I'm a part of that, and I'm part of the solution and not part of the problem anymore, you know? So in the big book, it says that we had how we recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And I think that seemingly is so important, because it seems like we're hopeless, but we're not. There is a solution, and it is inside these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous where I found my solution. I did, I sort of went on this little spiritual pursuit and studied like all these different religions and spiritual paths and what, you know, and it can get complicated and you can get lost out there, at least I can. And what it finally, I just had this, like this wake up moment that, you know what, that keep it simple. Oh, I get that now, you know. That's fine, and I have nothing against any of that. I got a lot of great stuff out of all these different religions and out of religion itself, but the big book in this program is simple, and that should be your firm foundation. Hang on to that, because you can get lost out there, and that's what I learned that I had to do. I'm also of the belief that, for me personally, that I need to go back through the steps thoroughly and do the fourth and fifth step again. I have done it. I've got 8 years, so did I say my sobriety date? 7/22/2007. I have gone through it 4 times now, and I'm getting ready to work with a new person, and I'm on fire again. I'm ready to go through this. I think that, you know, if you want to do it once and you like those results, and then that's good for you. But I want more. I have so much more that I need to work on, and you know, there's things now that I think this was before my first fourth step. How did that not get on there? You know, but it's that more will be revealed, you know, thing. So, you know, I'm ready to keep peeling the layers off, because I know that I still, and I also learn where the things that I keep taking back and keep, you know, having the same, you know, certain issues over and over. And there's plenty to work on, and I, you know, I'm on fire to do it, and I hope that I do stay that way. You know, it's keeping it simple and not isolating is, that's very key too,
because I did go
through a little phase where I was not going to as many meetings, you know, and making excuses and justifying that. And you know, the more work you put into it, the bigger the paycheck, you know. So I was feeling lousy at home, and as soon as I get back to coming to these meetings and working with other alcoholics, then that, you know, that's lifted, and I get the paycheck for it. So I think that's all I've got. And I thank you guys for being here. I'm very grateful, Karen, that you asked me to do this service work.